Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, episode 228. This is the official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. My name is Brian Salvatore, and we're back with a short installment of the podcast this week. We are in the midst of spring training. Not much is happening, but that's okay. Chris and I got together to talk about Mets baseball, so we'll have a little bit of a show this week. We'll be back, I hope, next week with a full show. But until then, you can find Chris and I on Twitter. Chris is at Chris McShane. I am at Brian Needs a Nap. You can find our writing and more wonderful writing at AmazingAvenue.com. You can find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Amazing Avenue. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, in Stitcher, in your podcatcher of choice. And of course, you can always email the show, podcast at AmazingAvenueAudio.com. So here is my conversation with Chris, and we'll see you guys next week. Well, Chris, it's been a relatively uneventful week in Metsdom. We have a few things to talk about. The main thing was that even though today was, you know, as most listeners will know, we were recording this on Wednesday night, and, you know, today was International Women's Day, but it was also Tim Tebow Day in Metsville, and I saw a number of tweets, in fact, a surprising number of tweets saying exactly that, that it is Tebow Day. And Tim Tebow DH'd for the Mets today in a Grapefruit League game. And his stats were pretty Tebow-esque. Why don't you hit us with his line for today?
Okay, so he was 0-for-3. He struck out twice. He was hit by a pitch. But when he was hit by the pitch, he got doubled off first base. So it wasn't exactly a great first...
You forgot the most impressive stat.
Which one was that?
That when the bases were loaded with no outs, he grounded into a double play.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah, that one too. Yeah, all of those things happened. You know, these are things that, to be fair, I haven't seen anybody get hyperbolic about the situation. I've seen it a little bit leading into this or back maybe when the Mets first signed him, but I haven't seen any of that today, this evening.
Oh, somebody tweeted today, like, remember Tim Tebow, who has a career in broadcasting to fall back on, is taking a roster spot from somebody, which is a horrible position to be taking because it's just not true.
Right. Yeah, no, it's there is no harm coming from the situation, especially not in Grapefruit League games. You know, it's funny when you're at a spring training game. Sometimes you hear it on TV, too. You know, I know Jason Fry at some point recently had said, you know, something sarcastic in a tweet about people who are yelling at games like you're watching practice. And yeah. I mean, that really is what it is and what it's all about. And, you know, so getting back to what I was starting to say, I haven't seen anyone get too worked up like some, you know, major analysts may have. When the Mets signed him or when he was in the Arizona Fall League. And, you know, it's something that I think you can get maybe clarification from what Steve or Jeff or, you know, somebody who's super in tune with that side of the baseball world. But I thought it was funny at the time that the Arizona Fall League was being talked about like some all-star league for prospects because it just never came off as being that way to me. You know, I mean, you look at the guys who go, and it's a combination of guys who might need a little bit more work, say they were injured earlier in the year, some top prospects, you know, with the same sort of spirit of, you know, getting the more reps or maybe trying to tweak some things before they take their winter off and come back for spring training in their next season. But, yeah, I haven't seen a lot of that today. Maybe some columns will come out in the morning saying that the, you know, sanctity of spring training games has been, you know,
forever sullied.
Yes. So I'm not exactly expecting that, but, you know, if you're listening, if you're watching, however you tune into spring training and the Tebow thing has you worked up, you know, it's just practice. And whatever comes of his baseball career, will have so much more to do with what he does, at whichever minor league level he plays at.
Right. I think the only way you can be upset about it is if you or someone you love gets cut from a Mets minor league affiliate this year and Tebow makes that team. That is pretty much the only reason you're allowed to be mad about this.
Yeah, I would say so. So he's going to play again on Friday. We know that coming out of the game. The Mets said that officially he'd play again in that game and play in the outfield. You know, the guy clearly is athletic, but we're not going to find out anything conclusive. I think a lot of people already have their minds made up.
Right.
That is conclusive against him. And that's the very likely scenario. But what happens in these games, and say he gets into a couple more through the rest of spring training, it's not something to draw a conclusion on.
I mean, let's also remember the reason we're seeing him play is the World Baseball Classic. If this was a regular spring training, I doubt we'd be seeing Tim Tebow at all.
Yeah. You know, the Mets have a pretty big contingent in the WBC, Mets and former Mets.
Yeah.
You know, as we're recording, Team Israel has
set the world on fire.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. You look at the roster and it doesn't really make any sense.
I had a wonderful Mets moment the other night. It was maybe midnight or 12:30, and I was watching the Chinese Taipei versus Israel game, and Chinling Hu hit the ball to Ty Kelly, who threw it to Ike Davis.
Yeah, that is pretty great.
And I knew that myself and perhaps dozens of people were interested in that at bat for the same reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, this Tebow thing. I mean, it's such a LOL Mets move just because of, you know, the Mets have this reputation of just making bad decisions, and you know, in a vacuum, assuming Tim Tebow can play professional baseball, it's probably a bad decision. But it's a bad decision with almost no consequences. And we talked about this before. It's not a big deal. People are making it a big deal. However, my question for you, Chris, is do you think that if Tebow has a similar performance on Friday where he's just utterly hapless at the plate and makes an error or a misplay in the outfield, would that be covered in more detail, or if he goes 4-for-4 with a home run? Like, is the Tebow hatred or dislike such that will get the bigger reaction no matter what?
I would go with the 4-for-4 day with the home run.
Okay. I don't know.
I think it would be in different parts of sports media though, right? You know, yeah. say he goes 4-for-4 with a home run. That's going to be the top story on ESPN, I would imagine.
Yep.
You know, but if it's a really bad day, say another 0-for-3, 0-for-4, poor defense in the outfield, then I could see the pitchforks maybe coming out a little bit more in the New York columns.
Right.
Or national ones, you know. I don't think... Yeah, it's... He's an interesting character.
He is, and I think he engenders the most extreme reaction possible from everybody. If you're somebody who doesn't like Tebow, you hate that dude. And if you like Tebow, you love that guy unconditionally. You know, it's really weird to me because I don't fall into either of those camps.
Right.
I really don't care. And so it's a little bit odd to me, but people are passionate about the guy. And if nothing else, it's probably sold a few more tickets to Mets games this spring, and it certainly sold a few extra Tebow jerseys. You've seen that, right? How he's in the official team store at St. Lucie?
Yeah, I've seen that. Also, if you just go to, you know, as we were doing our prep for the episode, if you go to MLB.com, the second story right now is that Tebow's first act gets a big ovation because when he grounded into that double play, a run scored, and he got a standing ovation from the St. Lucie faithful, if you will. And so MLB.com has that currently as its second story. I mean, that rotates out a lot, but that is the case right now. And it's highlighting that grounded to double play and then has a link to get a Tebow t-shirt. So, you know, I mean, they're not dummies. The sport makes a lot of money. And I think they've, you know, figured out how to do that here.
Yep.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's funny with, and when it came to football, the over praise and over hype of what he was as a player was something that I was very against. You know, it was sort of like just an old fashioned, you heard that he knew how to win games, that kind of thing, you know, just the types of things that I think
that we consider bullshit.
Yeah, and the types of things that were traditionally in our realm against. So I got so sick of hearing that on the football side that I definitely was not a Tim Tebow fan when it came to him as a football player. And then with all this stuff, I'm just indifferent. You know, it is funny to the extent that there have been people at points along the way who've gotten really worked up about it. I find that very entertaining.
Yeah, so do I.
You know, I think the average Mets fan might chuckle at it or whatever, but probably isn't losing sleep over it.
Yeah. You know, we were kind of searching for some spring training storylines to talk about. We kind of, you know, Tebow is the big one, but both Lucas Duda and Jay Bruce have looked pretty good as of late. Duda, you know, had a late start on his spring because of back spasms and some hip pains, but he seems to be hitting pretty well right now. Jay Bruce also got off to a little bit of a slow start, but looked good. He had was the home run today or yesterday?
Today.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
The days all sort of blend together.
Everything just blurs together. But he's been looking all right too. And I mean, aside from that, Syndergaard looked okay. Matt Harvey had a stiff neck and didn't pitch great. We teased last week a hot take about a player being good again, and that player was Rafael Montero. And his second appearance was not as good as his first, but certainly not a bad performance. He struggled with control a little bit.
Right, so he's now at a point, he's thrown 7 innings in spring training. He has 10 strikeouts, 3 walks, and a 1.29 ERA. This is a small sample in practice, as we already covered. But if you're looking to latch on to someone who I think has been written off for the most part by just about everybody, it's Montero. So I don't know. I'm going to stay tuned into what he's doing and then maybe make it a case, the revival of his career as something useful to the Mets. So,
I mean, look, I think, you know, many people rightly so criticized the Mets selling off Gabby Ynoa under the cries of there's no pitching depth. So if Montero is a useful pitcher again, that alleviates that concern somewhat. I mean, it doesn't solve the issue, but it does help somewhat. And I think it's a fun story if Montero is good again. We're a long way from me necessarily believing that, but it'll be a fun story.
Yeah, it would be. And it would be nice to see something like that work in their favor. You know, the one thing that they've seemed to do really well in this era of the team is identify and develop pitching. And You know, I don't know what they could have possibly seen up to this point with Montero that wasn't evident to those of us who are watching the team, you know, on television or in person at the major league level. You know, whether there was something that was going on in Vegas that, you know, Frank Viola and the staff there particularly liked. You know, I don't know if that exists, but going back to when, you know, it was sent to the Orioles for nothing, you know, I'm still trying to believe that there was something baseball related that they saw in Montero. I just don't know what it is. So,
yeah, it's interesting too, because you mentioned before that, you know, when people are yelling at spring training games, that they're yelling at practice. To a certain degree, when you yell at a minor league game, it's not quite practice, but it's still different than a regular major league game. A lot of people are working on things. There's other things considered than just the win-loss record of the team. And I'm not saying that Montero was doing something, was working on stuff the whole time, and that's the excuse for his poor numbers last year. I'm not saying that at all. But it could be slightly more complicated than we are perhaps expecting it to be. And maybe during that, working through some stuff, like you said, Viola and the rest of the staff at Vegas noticed something.
Yeah, and going back to one of Jeff's favorite lines that I think was said on this podcast many times, don't scout the stat line, right?
Right.
So I'm not accusing anybody who is down on Montero of doing that, but you know, you look at what Gazelman had done in AAA, and you look at what Montero has done,
even Syndergaard.
Yeah, you know, it's Montero has a long way to go, like you said, before he proves anyone wrong or officially has turned things around. But that point that it's possible that there's more going on than is reflected in what you see after a game,
yeah,
is a valid one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see the rest of his spring. Again, because of the World Baseball Classic, he's probably going to get a little bit more of a look than he would have during a regular spring. Even though not a ton of, you know, none of the Mets starters are, starters are playing in the WBC. It's just, you know, because some of the bullpen pieces are, he's more likely to get an inning here or there. So I think that that's actually a really underrated piece of the WBC, is how many more players get spotlighted in WBC years because of, you know, the lack of the regulars in camp.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's I think, you know, we'll see how the next few days shape up. But I want to be into the WBC.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, it's fun to have some sort of competition that, one, features a lot of players who aren't going to be involved in, you know, whatever happens in American professional baseball this year.
Right.
So that's fun to see. Just a reminder, you know, you don't know which teams are going to make it and far into this, but you know, Japan has done well historically. Yep. in the WBC, and
right now they're looking pretty good again.
Yeah, and it's kind of fascinating that, you know, what would happen over the course of a long season with that team competing against major league teams probably looks very different from what happens in the tournament right now.
Absolutely.
But it's kind of fun to take a different style and culture of the game and put it up against another one, you know, where there may be a talent disparity depending on, you know, how stacked a roster is. If you're looking at it, you know, a team like the United States or the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico, but that short burst of just guys who are not familiar with facing each other is kind of fun.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's like, it's cool to see Mets in it doing well, but I don't think that's like the main reason to watch if right. you're on the fence.
Yeah. It's interesting. When I was in college, the XFL was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
As I'm sure you remember as well. And I went to college in Pittsburgh, and XFL MVP Tommy Maddox wound up getting the starting quarterback job for the Steelers based partially on his XFL prowess. And I wonder if there's one of these either unsigned free agents or, you know, fringy player or whoever. Like, I know Team Israel has a player that was, I forget who it is now, and this is bad journalism, but who was scouted based on his mom's Facebook page. Did you hear the story?
I don't think I did.
I heard this again in the middle of the night, so forgive me if my detail is wrong here. But one of the coaches for Team Israel, I keep saying Tim Israel, that's a person, for Team Israel was looking for a, I believe it was a shortstop, and somebody said, like, oh, check out this person's Facebook page, and it was his mom had put up a video of him playing baseball, and that's how he was scouted for the World Baseball Classic, which sounds like something out of Major League or, you know,
yeah.
some just fictionalized.
Like the Major League reboot.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so I find that fascinating, but I think it's really cool. Like, could that guy possibly wind up after the WBC getting an invitation to a minor league camp from some team and, you know, possibly playing in professional baseball later this year based on, you know, essentially a series of scrimmages.
Yeah, it's you know, you look, and there's probably some guys whose performances there have helped their stock in the past. Mm-hmm. Don't have any examples specifically off the top of my head, but yeah, the opportunity to see it in a different context is, I think, what makes it appealing. And, you know, it would be fun. I'm not a huge fan of, in general, of skills competition stuff, but knowing how other countries' leagues treat celebration, I would love, like, bat flip and home run trot contests, you know, just off the wall ridiculousness. Now, this is a tournament run by Major League Baseball, so I don't expect
that will never
any of that.
Exactly, yeah.
But it would be, I think it would be fun to embrace the international cultural aspect of what games are like. And, you know, it's, in our time zone, it's kind of like, okay, you wake up and there's a game that, you know, it's an extra innings. You just woke up and it was that first game. Was it, it was Korea and Israel.
Yep.
And that game was an extra inning. So they're like, oh, hey, if I want to, you know, throw on some baseball while I get ready for work, that's here for me now, you know? But that's cool and kind of like that quirky way that this is not when we traditionally watch baseball.
Right.
But, you know, just seeing a packed stadium in Korea or Japan or Australia or any of the places that have had WBC games over the years. You know, it's kind of a fun thing.
Yeah. It's also, it was fun to watch Ike Davis play again and just remember certain parts of his game that I had totally forgotten about. Like, for instance, totally forgetting that how much he bitched and moaned at the umpires all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that I saw during the game that was on when I woke up, that, you know, the at-bat didn't go well, and he immediately turned and barked at the umpire.
Yep.
Which, to tie it all together, Tim Tebow gave the umpire a look when he struck out looking in his first at-bat today. Which is, I don't know. I think I kind of love it. I it's ridiculous. Like, oh, hey, this is my first at-bat in front of anybody, you know, against a major league player. You know, and Rick Porcello, who had the year of his life, and if he comes anywhere close to repeating it, to me, he's like the Daniel Murphy of pitching.
That's actually a really good way to put it.
who's the guy? Oh, who's the Oriole? The outfielder.
Give me a year. Give me something.
No, no, no. Brady Anderson, right?
I was actually, that was, I'm not joking you. I'm not bullshitting you. That was my first impulse to say, and I had no idea where you were going with it, but I was going to say Brady Anderson.
Well, just, you know, from the archives of baseball history, a guy who had a year that just didn't look anything like any of his other years. And I guess to a certain extent, Paul LaDuca had, you know, something similar. But Brady Anderson hitting 50 home runs is sort of the way I think of, you know, Daniel Murphy hitting, what did he hit last year, 25?
Right.
And Porcello winning a Cy Young, just, you know, total outliers.
Absolutely.
I mean, maybe in 6 months or a year or 2 years, I look completely wrong. And, he, you know, there's three Cy Youngs in a row and Daniel Murphy wins an MVP. But that's not, I wouldn't put money on either of those things at the moment.
It's probably a good bet, though. You probably get it in pretty cheaply and make a big return on it if you were putting money on it.
True. But yeah, I don't know. I think we've just wandered into a thought that we had early in the offseason. Going into this year, who has the better year, Neil Walker or Daniel Murphy? And I don't think anything's changed in the way that I would answer that. You know, most people would probably bet on Murphy, but I would not be shocked at all if he looked a little bit more like his normal self.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of the most consistent season to season. The guy like almost matched his OPS exactly a few times. You know, yeah. I mean, it's just like the model of above average, slightly above average to, you know, another notch, just playing above average, somewhere in that range of hitting. And then all of a sudden just boom, you know, I mean, but I don't want to discredit what he did specifically, but I think the context of home runs in baseball in general probably had a little bit to do with that and plenty of other guys, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Asdrubal Cabrera had a great year, but, you know, home runs were up, and it probably had a little bit to do with why his power numbers were the best he's had in a while.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, the baseball is identical according to the sport of baseball, but it's slightly hard to believe. We were dry on material, and now I've come around to the juice ball theory. So
that's the kind of stuff you can only get on our podcast, just meandering into hot takes. Any other spring training storylines you want to get to?
Luckily, no. I mean, we're going to find
luckily.
Out. No, it's spring training is a no news is good news time of year.
Absolutely.
So obviously I'm still interested in David Wright's shoulder recovery and return to playing full baseball games. But one little sneak preview that we'll get, Zach Wheeler is scheduled to be in a game for the first time in a long time. And again, you can't jump to a conclusion based on it, but it would be comforting to see him in a game.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's, you know, when we talk about Mets pitching depth, I think it's been pretty consistent for us that going into spring training and going into the regular season, that Wheeler falls more in that category. And it, you know, just because of the amount of time he's been away and the limitations he'll face, even if he remains healthy and effective. So I'm looking at anything he does from here on out as gravy. So, you know, hopefully that first outing goes well.
The outing is what, tomorrow or the, no, Friday.
Friday. Yeah, Friday.
I think he's scheduled Friday, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Harvey and Wheeler are scheduled on Friday, and Tebow will be playing the outfield.
Man,
that's a day.
If that was Saturday, I would say we should set up some sort of live stream and do a live podcast during it. But we probably both have to work on Friday, so.
Yes, I can say that I do. But, oh, right, okay, so Friday's split squad, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know which game which guy's doing. But split squad almost makes it even better.
Absolutely.
Harvey and Wheeler on the same day is like the repeat of Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
Except like a much more, it's a Friday and a much more depressing version of it, you know, just based on where they both are. And
like every pitch is going to be you're holding your breath during it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, you know, spring training is extra long this year because of the WBC, but days and weeks tend to go by pretty quickly. So, you know, right now we sit here and there's still quite a bit of spring training left, but it will be over before we know it. So I am hoping for relatively empty podcast agendas.
I can get behind that.
And, you know, I think we can, people can listen in as we talk podcast shop, but I would say that in the coming weeks, we'll probably touch on previewing things a little bit, you know, positions or certain areas of the team, a couple segments at a time as we get closer to opening day. So it would be nice to make that transition and, you know, not have to touch on any further crises.
That would be lovely.
So, I mean, right now we're not thinking about the worst case scenario of first base, which some people might have been when they heard that Duda got his cortisone shots.
Right. All right, well, let's move on to our other two quick news items. You want to go sad and then go happy?
Yeah, go out on the high note.
Yeah. Last night, longtime Mets director for television, Bill Webb, passed away after a battle with cancer. Webb was, you know, I'm not exactly an authority on this, but from what I gather, one of the most respected directors in all of baseball. I know he won multiple Emmys, which would be mentioned on the broadcast from time to time. Whenever there was a great shot, somebody would bring up his Emmys. And I know that he was also one of the directors that Major League Baseball would use for things like the All-Star Game and the World Series. So he was a very, very well-respected man, seemingly a good guy by all accounts. And, you know, just a sad story. He was, I believe, 65 years old, which is far too young. Any Bill Webb stories or anything to add there?
No, nothing directly. Just you saw it, you know, it sort of reminiscent of when Shannon Ford passed away last year.
Mm-hmm.
In that you're seeing a lot of things coming out from people who had worked with him and in her case had worked with her that really do seem genuine, you know, on a personal level, where when, you know, when people pass away, of course you hear good things, but in both cases here, it really does seem like it hit people, you know, their colleagues and the different areas of baseball, and the Mets, it seemed like it really did hit them pretty hard. So, you know, it's sad, obviously, and listening to some of the things, because SNY had put together a tribute to him, and I think it was something they had put together over recent months, probably knowing that it was something that they were going to have to use at some point.
Right.
So, yeah, it's tough, and, you know, I have I think a particular interest in some of that minutia, And that don't mean at all to diminish the lengthy career and achievements that he had, but people don't think of who's directing their sports broadcast on a daily basis.
Right.
You know, Gary Keith and Ron always made a point to mention his name and credit him pretty regularly. You know, if you were a diehard fan and really listening to games, you certainly knew who he was and what he did, and you know it, but it's just there's only so many people who are in front of the camera and heard on the air, you know, that those are the people who you connect with the most, because
right
it's only natural. But I like sort of the unsung people, the, you know, people who are doing really important work that goes unseen. So in that regard, it's somebody who I think you might not realize had as much effect on the way that you consume baseball as he did.
I think it also goes to show that, and this is maybe a bit of a tangent here, but I think the Mets don't get enough credit for how very, very good their average broadcast is. And having a guy like Bill Webb, who, as we just said, you know, has been one of Major League Baseball's go-to directors for years now, the fact that he was doing, you know, Mets games every day shows that the Mets really do care about their broadcast. And I think looking at the announce booth, especially since coming over to SNY, the Mets have just taken their broadcast very, very seriously. And for a team that isn't often lauded for doing, you know, great things all the time, especially off the field, I think it's a little bit of a shame that the Mets aren't celebrated enough for putting out, in my opinion, one of the best broadcasts in baseball. And I watch enough baseball to say that without fully talking out of my ass, shall we say?
Yeah, it's. We are spoiled in that regard. And clearly, Bill Webb was a big part of that and everything that we've experienced thus far. And yeah, it's something that the Mets have consistently gotten right. Even some of, you know, not every announcer along the way up to the, you know, obviously you had the legendary booths in the first couple of decades. And then things, I think the 90s was a little more mixed, where you had some of the great people involved, but not necessarily all at the same time.
You also had Fran Healy.
Yeah. True, you did. But but Gary Thorne was there. You know, yeah. I'm fond of his work.
Absolutely.
And I enjoy, you know, when the Orioles are on, he might have some dated takes on some things, but he's got a great voice and calls a good game. And, you know, he's certainly not the only one in a booth who might be a little dated in how they look at a game. But yeah, it's been nice. You know, it's almost ironic that it's been so easy and enjoyable to watch a team that has so often been bad.
Yeah.
You know, hey, let's make sure everybody has the best possible experience watching this team, even if we're not necessarily putting a competitive team on the field.
And that sounds like something every team would do, right? It sounds like, of course, we want our team to have the best presentation possible. But if you watch or especially listen to enough baseball, you know that just isn't the case sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's definitely, there are a lot of pretty bad broadcasts out there.
I hate being that guy too, but it's true. Yeah.
It's not like a New York City elitism thing.
No, it's not.
It's pretty legitimate. You know, there are other good broadcasts, to be sure, but, you know, 30 teams, there are some stinkers, as Keith would say.
Yeah. And there's just probably not. You figure with 30 teams between TV and radio, you need a minimum of 4 announcers, right? There's probably just not 120 great announcers out there.
Right.
So you make do with what you have.
Yeah.
Well, let's end on a happier note. Rest in peace, Bill Webb. Our condolences to your family and friends, and we hope that the Mets can honor your memory by having having their new regular director be half the director that you were. But and then on a later note, this happened, I guess, on Thursday during the game, right? Last Thursday, I think.
Sounds about right.
I was watching it with my daughter. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it was Thursday. So the Mets were in the field and they were playing the Marlins. And I forget which Marlins hitter it was offhand, and I should have looked it up and I forgot to. Essentially, let's go with the bat, and the bat goes flying towards the Mets dugout. And, well, Chris, I'll let you take it from there.
So the guy who's known for his glove and his defense happened to be standing in the dugout, and he caught the bat that was, spinning end over end as it was sort of going directly towards Brandon Nimmo, who looked like he moved into the path of the bat.
Yeah, I don't really know where he was going, but that's okay.
But Luis Guillorme saved the day with the most nonchalant catch of a bat you'll ever see. First of all, a catch of a flying bat, which is something you don't see, but just a nonchalant one hand. Like, it didn't look real. It was very much real. It just didn't look real because the way the camera cut over, the bat just stops. And, as like the replays of it that were slowed down a little bit more, you could see it better. But he had I think he has his left arm on the railing of the dugout and just, moves his right hand into the path of the bat, catches it, no problem, and then just flips it back towards the batter.
He caught it about as casually as anybody could catch anything. Unbelievable how little exertion he puts forth. He just lifts his arm up, catches it, and then almost in the same motion, because as you said, the bat's coming end over end, and he catches it and then kind of flicks it back on the field in the same motion. Everything about it was just so effortless, and
if you somehow missed it, because it was one of those things that was such a freak athletic feat that it made its way, I'm sure, into far more sports outlets and coverage than you would normally see for something in spring training with a minor league player. But if you somehow missed it, it's still up on the front page of Amazing Avenue, which obviously is where I would recommend to go to get your Mets news.
Of course.
Check it out. Or if you've seen it already, just watch it a few more times because it was that great.
This definitely ranks pretty high up there in just amazing things to see at a baseball game that really have nothing to do with baseball.
Yeah.
Every year you see that. There's a highlight of somebody, catching a baseball in their beer, or right. The hot dog guy making a great catch. All that stuff is fun. But this is really something that I've never seen before. And I think I could probably go my entire life watching as much baseball as I watch now and probably never see it again.
Yeah. I would not bet on seeing it again.
And that's fun.
And that's what baseball is all about.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Well, we'll be back next week, hopefully with some more stuff to talk about, but nothing bad. It was all good, interesting, quiet baseball news.
Yes, and send us your emails.
Yes, podcast@amazingavenueaudio.com.